plan out our whole day. First we'll make snow angels for 2 hours, and then we'll go ice skating, and then we'll eat a whole roll of Toll House cookie dough as fast as we can, and then, to finish...
The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Coming to you from the Carter Subaru Studio. Welcome. Welcome to our top stories this hour. Coming up right at the bottom of the hour here at 2:30, we are expecting a live press conference with Jay Inslee as he announces maybe some changes in the reopening of the state. So we'll bring you the first part of his live presser here at 2:30 this afternoon here on 97.3 Cairo FM and the Dory Monson Show. Hey, I feel like you and I are doing some good. Now, here's what we're seeing down in Olympia. When you give one party control of everything, it's a disaster for taxpayers. And we're certainly seeing that with the federal government, where the Democrats control both chambers of Congress and the White House. And we're seeing blue-collar jobs getting wiped out, tens of thousands of them, by Joe Biden. China is eating our lunch, by Joe Biden's own admission. And it's going to be disastrous for taxpayers and for workers, what's going on with the federal government. Here in our state, it's every bit as bad because the Democrats have enough votes to pass every radical idea that's being floated right now. Whether it's the pay per mile, and I'll talk with Chris Sullivan about that in just a couple of minutes here, but whether it's the pay per mile or the gas tax, they're running roughshod over the rideshare industry. They might just destroy Uber and Lyft in our state. And all they can think about is more money. And they're trying to do the unconstitutional income tax. That's the other big push. They want to make all gas vehicles illegal by the year 2030. So they wouldn't even license a gas or diesel powered vehicle 9 years from now. I mean, this is the most radical legislative session. And that's what happens when you give Democrats unchecked rule. You have to have a split so that there's some dynamic tension that stops them from just taking all of our money. One thing where I feel like our show has made a small difference, we're getting a little bit of credit for this. I talked, I don't know if it was a week or 2 weeks ago, there was a bill in Olympia that was going to essentially eliminate police from using dogs, canine, as part of their arrest process. And I talked with a canine officer named Chris about,
you know, in a perfect world, you know, I've said this 100 times, in a perfect world, we'd love to be able to just kind of verbally call people out of places and take people into custody.
they would follow your command and just complacently walk out, right?
Right. But the reality is that, you know, there are times where people flee, and these dogs, the canine handler and his partner are some of the most trained tools in the department. You know, even we put more hours in than basically any other specialty within law enforcement. Sure. Number two is we're tracking and trying to apprehend only people who are wanted for violent crimes. You know, we're not tracking people who, you know, steal candy bars or
you don't send a dog after a shoplifter.
Of course not.
Okay, but it looked like the Democrats were going to, you know, ramrod this through because they can. They can do anything they want right now. And they're doing all this pro-crime, pro-criminal, anti-taxpayer stuff. But I'm happy to report that Republican Gina Mosbrooker talked to Brandy Cruz. And even though the Democrats had all the bills and all the votes to pass this bill and had all the momentum to take away police dogs, maybe our little radio show and calls that my listeners made a difference.
I'm excited that they're willing to make that concession in order to really dive into it before we just ban canines in the state of Washington.
Let me ask you, Representative, did they have to? Did Democrats have to make that concession, or would they have had enough votes?
They absolutely have enough votes. So we're grateful that they listened to emails, they listened to us in this sense, and we were able to go back to the table. They even allowed stakeholder meetings of canine handlers who were experts and handle a canine daily, a couple different meetings late at night on Zoom from across the state of Washington, who were able to weigh in on why this is important and what their concerns were. And we didn't have any that weren't willing to do more training.
And that is why I've been giving out the legislative hotline number more than I ever have in the past. You have to weigh in. You have to be the counterbalance against the tsunami of taxes and pro-criminal bills that's coming out of Olympia. If you hear about something that doesn't sit right with you, you have to call the legislative hotline, 800-562-6000. And you just heard that it's working. It's working. We're making some headway with all the craziness down in Olympia. Okay, with all that as mere prelude, let's get to the big lead.
The big lead. Your tax dollars at work.
Well, as we told you a few days ago, there's a bill in Olympia that would plan a massive gas tax increase in our state. But there's another bill that's even more troubling. I've told you that for years now, they've been moving toward making every single road in the state a toll road. They'd put a transponder in your car. They will track where you travel, how much you travel, and that has taken a huge leap forward in this legislative session. Our transportation specialist is Chris Sullivan. He joins us here on the Dory Monson Show. So, Chris, tell me about this bill. How close is this to coming to fruition?
It's actually not a bill, Dory, at this point. What it is basically the recommendation of the Washington State Transportation Commission. They spoke at the legislature this week, specifically to the House Transportation Committee, about where they are in this nine-year discussion and, you know, looking at the road usage charge. It kind of bringing them up to date on what they think should happen, when they think it should happen, and moving forward. As you know, we had that pilot project a couple years ago in 2019 where we had a couple thousand people try out the road usage charge, and this is kind of them working down the road with the goal of, by about 2030, to transition all of us away from paying gas tax to paying a road usage fee.
Okay, and the road usage fee, they're talking about 2.4 cents per mile. My sources have told me right from the get-go that the goal is to get transponders in our car, and that 2.4 cents, it's just the beginning, that they will try to make it maybe $20 to drive into downtown Seattle during morning or afternoon rush hour. It might be 25 cents to go to your kid's elementary school in the neighborhood. But is there anything in the bill that would prohibit them from making this a variable charge based on what road is used and what time of day?
It has not gotten to the point of actually spelling out the minutiae of the financial details like that. What you're talking about there, kind of like a cordon pricing idea, they're talking about, say, charging in downtown Seattle. We're not quite there at this point. The 2.4 cents per mile basically comes from, and it's simple math, is the gas tax now, 49.4 cents a gallon. The average car in Washington gets a little over 20 miles per gallon. That equals 2.4 cents per mile that we're paying right now in gas tax, if you just change the way you think about it. So the idea is actually to make this revenue neutral, at least from the Washington State Transportation Commission's perspective. They don't want this to be what you think it might become, and it may become. We can't tell the future, but the idea was to make this revenue neutral. But that's, again, based on a 49.4 cent gas tax, and we know that there are going to be a gas tax increase this year of anywhere from 6 to 33 cents a gallon, depending on which package gets passed, and then you add a carbon tax on top of that, and potentially the low carbon fuel standard could add even more. So they're going to have to figure out the per mile as we move forward over the next 9 years. But yes, there is something that says that 2.4 cents could move up or down to try to, you know, to balance out what it is that they need. But I have not heard anything of it going, you know, that high. But again, we haven't gotten that far down the road to make this into an actual piece of legislation. They're still studying, but the plan is to transition to this and have this all figured out by 2030 so that the state can go forward with it.
Well, here's what I've discovered over the last year, Chris. My future, I'm probably not going to drive a lot. I'm doing my radio show from home. I probably, you know, I used to do the average driver. I was doing 1,000 miles a month, 12,000 a year. I bet I haven't driven much more than 1,000 miles in the last year. So this would hardly cost me anything. I still don't want it. I don't want a transponder in my car. I don't want people. Bob Ferguson might be our next governor. I think he's the most dangerous politician I've ever seen in my lifetime. I don't want people like Bob Ferguson having access to where we go, when we go. I think that giving government that kind of access to our lives is fraught with peril.
And there is a huge privacy concern in this. There is no doubt about that. But the way this is being set up right now, is you could go low tech to high tech, depending on whatever is your comfort level. A GPS device would not be required as it stands today. You could just do a simple odometer read. You could go into the Department of Licensing, maybe once a quarter, have them write down your odometer. You could do it yourself. Or you could go all the way up to a full-on GPS that tracks everything from where you've driven to the time of day, those kinds of things. So you could go low-tech. There's nothing in this as of yet that would require a GPS, because there are plenty of people, even some who testified at the hearing this week about this process. They're very concerned about that, including one state representative who had his identity stolen and used for a fraudulent unemployment benefit last year. And he's like, how can you guarantee that if we tie this up to the web or do this, that information, in addition to my information of my car, you know, how can we prove that? Or what are your safeties in that? And again, that hasn't been figured out yet.
That was going to be my next question of you, because you mentioned that in your story. I'm one of those people. My wife and I.
Me too.
You guys, some other friends of ours at the radio station, we had our identity stolen last year thanks to the incompetency of Washington unemployment. We just got word a couple of weeks ago that we might have to be dealing with a second wave of stolen identity. If the state of Washington so horribly botched getting unemployment out there, they couldn't keep hundreds of millions out of the hands of Nigerian scammers, they couldn't protect our identity, and now we're supposed to trust and expect that same state of Washington can be trusted with our driving information and where we drive, when we drive, I don't think they've done anything to earn that trust.
Exactly. And that is a huge, I mean, even before that security breach, when this was being in the testing phase, when they did that pilot project, more than 50% of the people who participated didn't want any type of GPS in their car. And that was even before that. So that's a huge hurdle from a public persona, or sorry, a public psyche perspective that they're going to have to get over as well. And in fact, it was interesting. You talk about what's down the road technology-wise and the best way to figure this out. And one of the discussions was at some point they believe that your car will just talk to the gas pump via Bluetooth and it'll figure it all out for us. Like, oh, that doesn't seem unsafe at all. To have something like that going on a public Wi-Fi at a gas station. I mean, that's, you know, years and years potentially down the road. But it's just, I mean, there's way too much, I think, up in the air in terms of how this would actually work and whether it would work and how it would be paid and be privacy compliant and things like that to try to roll this out in 9 years from now.
Okay, last thing. There's been so much talk about regressive taxes in Olympia, and they all lament how regressive taxes are. Rich people can afford to buy electric cars or hybrid cars. If you are lower economic, you're probably driving a 10-year-old vehicle that doesn't have as good a gas mileage as some of the other people on the road. Then you have farmers in eastern Washington who need to have diesel trucks to drive long ways as they take care of hundreds of acres. You have tradesmen who drive panel vans so they can get their tools to their electrician or their drywall jobs. This seems like it is just targeting the working class people, the poor people, and it's just another example that they want to just squeeze every single penny they can out of the people who can least afford it.
And it's really interesting that discussion actually came up. Representative Taylor, I'm not sure, she's new to the legislature, but she's like, okay, equity is a really big thing that we're working on now. how is this equitable? She goes, I can't even afford an electric vehicle, and I'm an attorney who makes a pretty decent living. I'm pretty sure the people in my district can't afford to make that transition. And, I mean, there's also a bill that we've talked about, I think maybe you and Hannah have as well, about switching to all electrics starting in 2030 as well. I mean, who can afford that? And the prices are coming down, certainly, and charging is getting better. But to the point where everybody is expected to make this jump, it's going to hurt the lowest of the low because of the lack of efficiency, the inability to buy a fuel-efficient car and things like that. So it's funny, and the first line of my story, it was kind of, I kind of wrote through it out there just because it came up in the discussion. It's so weird that our state keeps pushing to raise a fossil fuel tax, but at the same time, pass rules to try to get rid of fossil fuels. So it's like they're addicted to the drug of fossil fuels, but they don't. But they want it to go away, which it doesn't really seem to make much sense. And that actually came up during the hearing this week. It's like, yeah, it's kind of odd that we're doing this, but that's the situation we're in.
Odd is everything they do. All right, good information. Chris Sullivan is our transportation specialist. Chris, I appreciate it. Thanks for coming on with me today.
Anytime, Dory.
All right, and up next in The Big Lead.
The Big Lead. I sense a Dory rant coming on.
Then we have one more bill to tell you about, and that is the effort to destroy the rideshare industry in our state. As you know, the city of Seattle has added a surcharge for pickups and drop-offs in the Seattle, in the city of Seattle, which, and I will tell you, Uber, and I don't use Lyft as much. I have used Lyft, but mostly Uber. What a great advance for all of us that people who wanted to make extra money on the side could use their personal vehicles to just hustle. I mean, it's the pure definition of a side hustle. And for those of us who were sick and tired of how inefficient and outrageous the taxi cab companies were in, you know, being scattershot and picking you up, you being able to reach them. They didn't advance technology nearly fast enough until their hand was forced by the rideshare companies. Well, now the Democrats in Olympia, they want to mandate that Uber and Lyft, a certain percentage of their fleets be electric cars, and they're going to give them a target date when they have to have X number of electric cars on the roads of Washington. Now, again, these are people's individual, personal, private vehicles. And if you can afford an electric vehicle, which are expensive, maybe you don't need to have a side hustle. But down in Olympia, it doesn't matter. It is this all green, all let's destroy jobs, Let's destroy family budgets, and we're doing it all for the planet. And, of course, it's not going to make one bit of difference for the planet. It is just a way, a very cool, hip way, because nobody can say they're against carbon emissions being reduced. But it's just a way to transfer money. So that's the latest, is this proposal to get all Uber and Lyft vehicle fleets to a electric car mandate. And so they are going to ruin this industry. The reason that Uber and Lyft has just taken off worldwide is because it was so efficient and it was user-based. And now that government is sticking its nose in, they are going to ruin the industry. I don't think there's any question about that. All right, and I'll give you bill numbers on that one as well as we move forward here. But for now, that is your Big Lead this hour.
The Big Lead on Cairo Radio.
We are expecting a Jay Inslee press conference to begin in 5 minutes or so. We're going to bring some of that to you live because there may be some changes in opening up the state economically. And if there are, we want you to hear it live and first. You're on 97.3 Cairo FM and the Dory Monson Show. I'm sorry. That That is simply outrageous. That, first of all, that Joe Biden says they're not going to have enough vaccine shots for everybody who wants one until the fall. That is the teachers' union telling Joe Biden what to say, because the teachers' union, many of them, do not want their members back in class before next fall. And then for Joe Biden to blame this on Donald Trump. Throughout the campaign, Joe Biden said, I have a plan. I have a plan. I'm going to take care of America the way President Trump is not. And now he's blaming it on the previous administration. They get these vaccines from the conceptual stage to the marketplace in record time, years ahead of anything else that has been created as a vaccine. And now Joe Biden is saying that it's Donald Trump's fault that he can't manage to get people vaccinated before fall of 2021. Talk about passing the buck there, Joe. You said you were going to be better. You're worse. We're waiting on a Jay Inslee press conference in Olympia. It was supposed to start 5 minutes ago at 2:30. We're told that we're going to want to carry it because there is going to be some new information on reopening the state economically. So as soon as Jay Inslee's ready to rock down in Olympia, we're going to bring that to you. Hey, we just got some audio in. Down in Olympia, there was, they're talking about this wealth tax where they would hit up Bill Gates and Jeff Bezos and a couple of other people for $1 billion a year. And I talked to the sponsor of that bill, and, you know, she came on, even though she knew I was going to debate her on it. And she was running the hearing for the bill yesterday in Olympia, and guess who called in? Shama Sawant. And the legislators, even the Democrats in Olympia, they don't seem to like Shama Sawant much better than a lot of other people.
Shama Sawant. Go ahead.
Good morning, Chair Frame, Vice Chair, member of the House Finance Committee. I'm Shama Sawant, Seattle Socialist City Council member and a rank-and-file member of the Teachers Union, AFT Local 1789, in support of House Bill 1496. To say a bill to tax extreme wealth and profiteering is overdue is a gross understatement. Systematic long-term starving of public resources has led to criminal underfunding of education, housing, healthcare, jobs, and human services. But now, even during a pandemic, American billionaires' net worth has increased by a staggering $1 trillion.
Okay, so then Sawant starts talking about what we did in Seattle to get the head tax, and they don't care down in Olympia. She was there to comment on this new bill, and I like the way this went.
Supporting the Constitution. Public comment, impugning, you should not be interrupting.
In matters of decorum, we need you focused on
statewide
business tax measure. That's not related to the current bill.
I'm sorry, I have a constitutional right to testify, and you should not be interrupting.
In matters of decorum, we need you focused on the bill at hand.
No, you are completely subverting the Constitution. Public comment, impugning the intentions, even as you said, is 100% protected by the First Amendment. Would you please let me continue?
If it is focused on the bill at hand, Council.
It is focused on every bill that you will talk about on taxing wealthy and big business. So please let me continue. Last month, state lawmakers told Crosscut that they will need to, quote unquote, phase out Seattle's Amazon tax as
Council part member, of the I've asked you measure. Three times to stay focused
that
on the
they
bill
wanted
at hand.
To avoid, quote unquote.
I'm sorry. I've asked everybody
then
to
they
say.
Then they muted her. Oh, if only all of us had that option. They muted Shama Sawant down in Olympia yesterday because she couldn't stay on task. Okay, Jay Inslee is just stepping up to the microphone down in Olympia, and we are going to... I never know what your delay is, Sean. Is he talking yet? Because I have him talking on my feed. Okay. So we're probably about 30 seconds. We're usually about 30 seconds, my feed and yours. So we are expecting that Jay Inslee is going to tell us that 5 regions in the state are going to advance to phase 2. And a lot of the state, you know, stuck in phase one, haven't been able to open their restaurants, their bars, and it has been an economic disaster for so much of the state. But we are just getting word that Governor Inslee is going to advance much of the state, some of the state, to phase two. And so let's take you to Olympia live. We don't have it yet? Wow, you're way behind me. He's been talking for a minute on my feed here. Okay, let me tell you a little bit of what I know about this, because I have been getting
we're having technical difficulty. Sorry, he is talking. Sean, do we have him?
Oh.
I am just opening up the link that you sent me, and yes, I've got him now.
Okay, there we go.
All right, okay, we go to Olympia Live.
As well as 7-day averages for ICU capacity and percent positive COVID tests. The South Central region currently meets two of those four. We just need to get them over one more so that they can join the other 92% of the state. We look forward to that. I think you've seen on this chart the progress that other regions have made. We're looking forward to that progress as well. Now, we are also very pleased. We are making real progress on the pandemic. I'll put up a graph showing the epidemiological curve, showing our case counts. And you'll note that they have gone down fairly significantly over the last few weeks, and we couldn't be more pleased about that. We're doing that because people have been following science. We have been masking up. Business owners have been complying with the healthy rules and being very innovative in this way. People are showing smart ways to protect themselves and their families by not having unnecessary gatherings in their homes. And because we have been doing these things, because we have been following the science, this is a large part why these numbers are going down and why we're being able to open up 92% of our state to further economic activity. So I want to thank everyone who has been part of this mutual effort. Everybody who's making these individual decisions are part of a statewide mission to save lives. And I want to thank you for being part of that mission statement. We also have good news for businesses and landlords and tenants who obviously have been having real trouble throughout this pandemic. I'm today authorizing the Department of Commerce to distribute an additional $87 million for additional rental assistance and additional business assistance. That distribution will be split evenly for rental assistance and also business assistance through the state's disaster response account. We need to use this funding to keep our relief efforts going while we're waiting for further federal assistance. So this is neither the first nor the last time that we have been putting funds forward to help tenants and help landlords and help businesses. Commerce has previously distributed $110 million to more than 30,000 households in the state of Washington through our rental assistance program. And obviously, we're talking about people who have been severely affected by the pandemic and can't pay right now. Obviously, anyone who can pay, we encourage them certainly to do so. But this funding will continue our eviction rental assistance program until new federal assistance arrives. Now, business assistance, we're also very happy about this. We'll have this additional $43.5 million going for business assistance grants that can be used by businesses to provide for measures associated with the pandemic. These funds can be used for rent, for mortgages, utility assistance, technical assistance, and to help prevent permanent closure of these businesses. It's not alone what we're doing. Since the pandemic began, Commerce has provided about $200 million for businesses and for nonprofits assistance. And additionally, more relief is on the way. The legislature has now passed a $2.2 billion COVID relief bill that combines state and federal dollars. And this will include $325 million for additional rental assistance and another $240 million for business assistance through the Working Washington Grant Program. So today is a very good day for being able to have businesses open and customers being able to have more access. It's a good day to give some financial assistance to these hard-hurt businesses that have been so innovative. And to talk about further efforts, I want to turn this over now to our Department of Commerce Director, Lisa Brown, who's been leading these very aggressive efforts to help our business community.
Okay,
Lisa.
And I'm going to jump in here.
Thank
we will continue
Governor.
To monitor the governor's press conference and keep you posted throughout the afternoon here on Cairo. So here is what we know. South Central region of Washington, which is Ellensburg, Yakima, Tri-Cities, Walla Walla, that is going to stay in phase one. And, man, those restaurants over there, they are hurting so bad. Puget Sound and West regions will stay in phase two. That's where we currently are. And then they're moving the East, North, North Central, Northwest, and Southwest regions from phase one to phase two. So one, two, three, five regions are getting bumped up to phase two. Two regions are staying the same in phase two, and then one region is staying the same in phase one. So it's marginally good news, as they are being very slow in reopening the state. Again, what I find baffling is Jay Inslee says the teachers should be back in school, and the reason is that most of the COVID deaths are people over the age of 70. And really, he's over the age of 75. I don't know why they can't open the restaurants and bars and just encourage people over those ages to not go out, but allow the businesses to open if it's not a risk to the vast majority of the customers or the workers who are under that danger age. But again, very little of how we're handling this makes sense to me. Okay, let me take a quick time out, and then we'll come back and wrap things up. We'll have a little awesome audio next on the Dory Monson Show. And down the stretch we come. What a day, what a show, what a show, what a day. We'll keep monitoring Jay Inslee's press conference. If there's anything else notable, we'll have that for you throughout the afternoon here on Cairo. Let's get to our favorite sound bites of the day.
This is Dory Monson's awesome audio clips of the day.
Well, as we had in the news at the top of the hour, it's unbelievable that Joe Biden now says he won't have enough vaccines for everybody until fall. He said that he was going to be better than Donald Trump at getting the vaccines out there. It turns out he's worse. But this is the one that jumped out. I played this an hour or so ago, or a couple hours ago. Joe Biden in 2019 criticized Donald Trump, who said if Biden got his way, China would eat our lunch.
I don't know a single solitary one who would not change places with the problems the President of the United States has versus the problems they have. China is going to eat our lunch? Come on, man. They can't even figure out how to deal with the fact that they have this great division between the China Sea and the mountains in the east, I mean in the west.
When Donald Trump said, if you got control, Joe, China would eat our lunch. And Biden said, China eat our lunch? Come on, man. Now Joe Biden has control. And he told us today, earlier today, that indeed China is eating our lunch.
Last night, I was on the phone for two straight hours with Xi Jinping. And you all know as well as I do, these folks, and it was a good conversation. I know him well. We spent a lot of time together over the years I was vice president. And they're going to, if we don't get moving, they're going to eat our lunch.
Wait, that's exactly what Donald Trump said was going to happen if you got control, Joe. And you said, eat our lunch? Come on, man. You said, that's impossible. And now you're admitting that they're eating our lunch. I don't even know what that means. They're eating our lunch in China. By the way, his spokesperson, Jen Psaki, said, yeah, we're not in any hurry to deal with anybody.
So it is currently playing out, but we are not in a rush. And we are 3 weeks in. Our team is taking a very strategic approach to our relationship.
So, in other words, they're in no hurry to deal with China. Come on, man. Okay, we'll have some audio for you. Jay Inslee's talking a lot about Donald Trump now and the impeachment. I'm just getting some word on this. He's talking about convicting Trump during the impeachment hearing. Sounds captivating, Governor. Okay, we will have lots more for you throughout the afternoon. And Tom Curley, you're coming up next. God bless in these crazy times. Hey, don't...
Ladies and gentlemen, you're really a fantastic audience.